I will call to order the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement for May 17th, 2006. Members, the first item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes from the April 12th meeting. And Representative Kreshaw, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
I move the minutes.
Representative Kreshaw moves the minutes from April 12th, 2016. Any corrections, members? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. All right. That brings us to our next series of items this evening. And I will do just a little bit of setup and background on this. And I will also invite Senator Pappas as the co-chair, or I should say the vice chair as well, to share some thoughts and comments. Members, up through probably April 12th, we've been working on a number of policy-related issues, and as everyone knows, we've had the opportunity to hear from the plans as to their proposed stabilization of Minnesota's various pension plans. The issue that has come up that we've been grappling with and looking at has been the plans have brought forward their stabilizations and the things that have been worked out with the different interest groups. What we've had is a number of opportunities over this session and over the last 30 days that Senator Pappas and I have worked quite extensively looking with at options and alternatives and phasing in and different things. And we found out is that at the current time, we don't have the dollars for us to be able to begin to do the funding specifically for the corrections that have been offered. But what we have attempted to do was to work with the plans and to work with other interested parties to look at a way to be able to start with the process. And so as we looked at the plan's proposals, there was a provision in that kind of two different dates. There's the January 1st, 2017 date, which is when COLAs would go into effect. And then there's the second date, which was the proposed July 1st, 2017 date that the contribution increases would end up going into effect. Given the fact that through tireless efforts by Senator Pappas and I to look at alternatives and working with others, we have not been able to find a way where there's enough comfort level for legislative support to put into place right now the corrections without a guarantee that they're sustainable if the funding mechanism. Members have had a lot of concern about if we adopt these, what does that do to agency budgets if there isn't any funding? What happens if the school districts, if this is adopted and there isn't money and funding to school districts? Many members have come to me and said, I'm hearing from my school districts. So what Senator Pappas and I have worked out as a proposal is that we would take the first portion, which would be the COLA reductions for 1 year based on what the plans had submitted so that we could recognize and experience some of those savings for the plans at this time. We would also take the triggers, which are universally agreed based on the percentage of funding that should be coming out, and we've done some other small technical modifications, one of those for TRA being the changing of the date for fully vesting to be able to help with that process. One of the things that we were very concerned about as well is we realized that there's something that has to be done with the second portion of this, and that would be the stuff that would be effective on July 1st of 2017, which is the new biennium. And what we would like to be able to do, members, is to work this evening to have a conversation to talk about how we would move forward with the first part with a one-year reduction in COLAs to provide the commission and the legislature the opportunity to, in January of 2017, the new biennium, where we usually take into consideration our budgets, how we would look at moving forward and what kind of a plan we could put together with people continuing to work together to find a solution that's going to be workable to all parties moving forward. And so that's the general premise of what we're working on this evening. When we last tuned in the Pension Commission, there were two other technical amendments that we were going to be looking at. And if you have an agenda in front of you, those are 2 and 3. And the proposal that I had just mentioned is found in item 4 on the agenda. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Senator Pappas for some opening comments. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Representative O'Driscoll and I met last week with the governor and Commissioner Franz, and explain to them the situation, and the governor and Commissioner Franz understand that this sustainability plan that is being requested is very important and important for our bond rating to make sure we keep the plans on a trajectory to full funding. But they also recognize that some of the studies and the information, the demographic issues, the downturn in the market came in rather late for us to be able to plan this in the budget cycle. And that given a new budget cycle next year, I feel like they're strongly committed. In fact, they're strongly committed to try to even do something this year, this weekend, if in the end game some money falls to the bottom line. But if that doesn't happen, then they can build it into the state agencies' budgets in terms of their the governor's budget requests for next year and build into the governor's recommendation the mechanism in the school aid formula for state aid to cover the cost of the employer increase. So we feel like we've done a good job at educating a lot of people. We continue to do that in committees and tonight as well. We hope that the plan directors will come forward and tell us again what their feelings are, but also to tell our colleagues. And recently I had conversations with both the finance chair in the Senate and the majority leader who both said, yes, you know, it's cheaper to do it now than later. This is really important. We know, we understand that it has to be done. And I think what's really important, though, is that we as the Pension Commission kind of keep the House and the Senate on the same page. You know, we've never had, in my experience on the Pension Commission, we've never negotiated over pensions. We've always had a united front about what we need to have done. So I'm very pleased that tonight, even though this may be a baby step, we are still getting our administrative work done. We're still dealing with some of the personal issues that are involved, personal pension issues, and we're recognizing that the sustainability plan is very important, even though we can only take this first step this year.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. And what our plan is going to be, when Senator Pappas and I were working late last week to try to figure out how we can move this forward and in the process, we have been working in our respective chambers a little cart before the horse, but we had always intended to have a Pension Commission meeting because that is the job and the mission of the Pension Commission, to have these conversations and to work through these issues. So we are going to take each of the amendments that we have in front of us, talk about them, and give them a hearing. Senator Pappas and I were just kind of visiting that in the last 48 hours in various House and Senate and Commission meetings. This will have had four different hearings within the legislative process, and so that I think bodes well for the transparency on this. But again, the work of the Pension Commission is in front of us. So what we plan to do is to do the adoption of the same types of amendments that we had done in the respective House and Senate bills and wrap this up as though this was going to be the bill that we were acting on, but we have already begun moving the other bills in the House and the Senate because of the time constraints that we have with the session and rapidly approaching. So with that, members, I would like to have us take a look at our first amendment this evening, which is item number 2, and that has to do with the A-12 amendment. And I would ask Chief Niall Zuckman to come down and address this. This is, as I said, the first two things we're going to be looking at are some technical amendments. And while Mr. Zuckman is coming down, or Chief Zuckman is coming down, I'm going to ask Ms. Lincheski to maybe just do a little bit of an overview, and then we'll have Mr. Zuckman, Chief Zuckman, give us a little bit more of a background on it. So that, again, is item number 2, the 12A amendment that we're looking at. Chief Zuckman, welcome, sir. State your name for the record and proceed after Ms. Lincheski goes ahead and gives us a background.
Okay, this is a change to one of the para subdivisions or one of the para statutes to relieve, I guess, future volunteer firefighter associations from needing to reimburse the Spring Lake Blaine Moundsview Firefighter Relief Association for the administrative costs of beginning a process which amounts to joining PARA. So the association is a monthly benefit volunteer firefighter relief association, and last session they were given the opportunity to join PARA and have PARA administer their plans. The plan then was to have Spring Lake Park, Blaine, Mounds View Firefighter Relief Association pay PARA for the administrative expenses, which were estimated at that time to be between $150,000 and $200,000. At the end of the day, those costs came in at about $52,000. So Spring Lake is willing at this point to kind of just cover those costs on their own and not seek reimbursement from future volunteer firefighter associations who would want to join PARA for administrative purposes.
Chief, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and give us a little bit more background.
Mr. Chair, members, retired Chief Niall Dickman, but as you know, pension work never seems to be done, and I made a commitment to the Relief Board to finish this through, so here I am tonight. Ms. Lincheski captured it pretty good. We joined PRA. They'd estimated $200,000. Last year we suggested that might be a little high. They came in, did the work. It was $50,000. And the payback provision would have required us to pay about $38,000 regardless. And so I'd suggested to the Relief Association Board that to respond to basically the good faith that PRA showed in being judicious in those costs, to not continue the administrative burden of trying to track those costs in the future. And the Relief Association is more than happy pass the resolution. I'm here to convey that they'll absorb those costs. And so that can be repealed, and they can close that chapter, and other monthly plans can join without any cost prohibition.
Ms. Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add that the commission members have a letter from the Spring Lake Park Blaine Mounds View Fire Department that supports what Mr. Zickman is telling us right now.
Thank you. Questions for Chief Zickman?
And that letter is signed by Chief Zickman?
Mm-hmm. I was still chief when I signed it. Now it's retired chief.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like
Senator
move.
Pappas.
I'll move adoption of the amendment on behalf of Senator Johnson, who's not here.
Right. Senator Pappas moves the adoption of the A-12 amendment to the omnibus bill, the 2006 pensions omnibus bill. Any other discussion on the matter? Anyone from the public needing to testify on that matter before us? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. Chief, on behalf of the commission, thank you so much for your work over the years. Appreciate you coming back from retirement to be with us here at the end of session as we are wrapping up our work, sir.
I couldn't imagine being anywhere else tonight. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I bet you could if you really tried. If you really stepped out there, you might be able to find something. Thanks again, sir. Our next item is the 11A amendment, which is some technical corrections, as I understand, that were offered by the revisor's office, as well as some things that were discovered by our nonpartisan pension staff. Again, I'm going to ask Ms. Lincheski to give us a high-level overview of what we're looking at here, and then members, if we have questions, we can maybe begin to probe at that point. Ms. Lincheski.
The changes are really in two categories. One is to delete some references that turned out to not be necessary in the MSRS statute. These changes all relate to the extension of the disability application filing period. And after reviewing that language closely with MSRS, the decision was made, or at least the proposal was prepared here to remove the unnecessary language. The second category of changes here is to remove obsolete references to the, I believe, the Duluth plan, as well as make some changes to some references to other parts of the statute that just simply needed to be corrected.
Members, questions for Ms. Lincheski on those technical corrections? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Lincheski, you said the Duluth plan?
Ms. Lincheski.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I misspoke. That is not in this amendment that relates to the omnibus and a bunch of those changes, but No, there's nothing in here to that effect. I'm sorry about that.
Representative Murphy, thank you for keeping us on track. I don't think we're just checking to see if you were paying attention, but we do appreciate your attention to detail. Other questions? Anyone from the public needing to testify in the 11A amendment on the technical corrections?
Mr. Chairman, I'll just move the amendment.
Senator Pappas moves the 11A amendment for the inclusion in the 2016 Omnibus Pensions Bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. We are now to the item number 4, which is the A16 amendment, which I did begin speaking about a little bit earlier in our discussions. One of the things that I think that procedurally we need to begin looking at doing, since we are not adopting the full plan, is we need to consider a motion to not accept the plan so that we can do this, these provisions. And I would ask Ms. Lincheski if that's something that, to maybe comment on that as a part of our process and procedure as well. A little bit about what we'd be looking at.
So in Minnesota statutes, Section 352.045 and also in 354.42 is a provision that allows the employer contribution rate and the employee contribution rate to be increased if the board of the plan approves that increase. And that then is presented to the Pension Commission. If the Pension Commission determines that it either wants to modify or it does not accept the changes, that is the only way to stop those changes from happening as it's laid out in their proposal. So the employer contribution increases would occur unless the Pension Commission acts, and they would take effect next July 1, 2017.
And Ms. Lincheski, thank you for that. My understanding and my experience, not my understanding, my experience has been there's been question about the timing and how to make this happen. And so since we're not adopting those as a part of the 2016 pensions bill, the motions appear to be in order to reject and then have the legislature work with the plans to come back with the proposals, because we're not adopting those this year. Am I understanding statute correctly on that?
That's correct. So the motions in each case recommend against the proposed increase in employer contributions and employee contributions. So that does not apply in the case of TRA, which is only proposing an increase in employer contributions, but for MSRS, it is both increases.
Okay. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is a good time to hear from the plan directors.
Okay. And we'll pass these out for our consideration here this evening as well.
Mr. Chair, Lori Hacking, Teachers
Welcome.
Retirement Association. Just to clarify the provision, we haven't seen what you're handing out, but I assume it's current law.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Current law has a procedure that says we have to officially request, a fund has to officially request of the commission by letter by February 1 of a given year that we are requesting a contribution increase. And we have not done that.
Uh-oh.
And I don't believe MSRS has either. We have not done that. Instead, we have advanced the proposal that you had been considering this session. So it's up to you, but just to clarify, I don't think it's necessary for you to reject anything because we have not officially, using the provision that's in statute, we have not officially exercised that. Instead, we made a legislative proposal.
Mr.
Bergstrom.
Chair, Dave Bergstrom, I would be director of the Minnesota State Retirement System, and I agree that wasn't the intent. With that, we have a very formal process, and all of our boards, because we wanted to put together a package, did not opt to do this. So I don't think it hurts anything, but I don't think it's necessary.
Representative Albert, I'll get to you in just a second. The concern that has been brought to me by a number of people is because of the statutory provision, what happens if we don't? Would the plan still go ahead and we couldn't work to put a plan that would make sense in place? As we've talked about in this process, phasing in and doing some different things or shifts of how this might happen and different kinds of things. And so I'm wanting to make sure that we have a comfort level as a commission that we're not going to do one thing and then have something else happen that the commission and the legislature, by taking this action, wasn't planning on having happen.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to clarify. We could not exercise this option until next year.
Okay.
We are past those deadlines and would have no intent to doing that. The statute's pretty clear that we really have to notify you by February 1, and we have not done that February 1, 2016. If we were to try to exercise this authority, it would have to be in line for next year.
So
there's nothing between now and the next legislative session that our boards could do or set in motion that's outside that process.
So, Ms. Hocking, if I'm understanding you correctly, because you had notified us by February 1st of this year, that was your intent, it would be for February of 2017 that would take place at some point in the future after that. Am I understanding that correctly? And it may be a misunderstanding by myself and others who have raised this question for us.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It would be a process that if we did put in motion would be for next year. And my guess is the board would use a similar process to this year. We put together a package that would include some of the same provisions we've already discussed in a legislative package and would have to go through this process. So if there's some concern or skepticism that we're trying to go around it, I want to certainly be sure to indicate that's not possible.
Mr. Chairman.
That's not our intent.
Representative Albright, and then I'm going to go to Senator Pappas, because I did put Representative Albright on hold.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess to reiterate and actually add to the Chair's comments, I'm looking at both the motions and just in terms of maybe to alleviate the concerns about changes of decision or motivations after this meeting tonight, some type of language in a preamble that would say in lieu of or recognizing that time specific has now passed and recognizing that a request cannot be made until we subsequently make this motion in lieu of, so that to Ms. Hocking's perspective, understanding that they're not trying to get around the process, but also to recognize that they have gone beyond the deadline, just so that it is part of the record as we move forward that this has been discussed and they are amenable to the process undertaken and not making a new request until into the subsequent 17 year.
I apologize. Maybe I've slightly misunderstood that, and I know that we've been working on a lot of things in this. But Senator Pappas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would support something more along the line that Representative Albright is talking about, because I wouldn't want to vote for something to say we recommend against the change, mm-hmm. because I actually support the change and would hope that we can still do something next year, recognizing that it's not going to happen this year. So I wouldn't want to say I don't support the change. But I would be fine with clarifying the law. And I just want to know if Ms. Hacking or Mr. Bergstrom might give us a little history lesson as to why there is that provision. Is that kind of a default defense if, you know, so for some reason the legislature doesn't act for many years and in order to save the pension funds the board feels they have a fiduciary responsibility to do something? What's the purpose of
it? Mr. Bergstrom, we'll start with you, sir.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, it actually started with PERA, and they had a situation where the legislature did not act to increase their contribution rates, and then subsequently MSRS had the same thing. We had a year where we asked for a contribution rate increase, and it was denied. And so the idea behind this, with that boards as fiduciaries, would have the ability to increase contributions if necessary. And then you have the final denial of that. But it was really because there had been a couple of sessions where we were not successful passing a contribution rate increase, and that's why we put this in.
And, Mr. Chairman, have you ever used this provision, or is it just more like a threat?
No.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, we used it in 2014. Mm-hmm. So, and we came in front of the commission and explained that we were doing it. So we were at 5 and 5. Mm-hmm. And then we increased contributions because we didn't increase contributions in 2010. You know, we purposely avoided that. So we increased our contributions from 5 to 5.5 and 5.5. But we were very open with it. You know, we came to the commission and said, here's why we're doing it. And then we actually subsequently put it in law as well. So it's a very open process. But that was the reason behind it, is to do that. And I think PERA did something similar.
Ms. Hacking, did you also want to share your thoughts and experience?
Mr. Chair, this authority for TRA is relatively new. It was just this year that we had the authority. So we haven't exercised it. I was just going to add that PERA, I believe, used it once, maybe even twice. And, again, it's the same process that Mr. Bergstrom described. The board proposed it. They sent a letter officially in the time frames that's spelled out in statute, and you considered it and ratified it in a sense.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, in recognition that the motions before us are in good order, and I would certainly support Senator Pappas's desire to have something on the record as well. I'm just wondering if a suggestion to the leadership of the pension funds themselves, just to send a letter to the commission recognizing the passing over of that time specific, so that we have that in the record rather than muddy up the water with the motions themselves.
Representative Albright, if I understand, you're saying that at the signature of the appropriate parties from the plans, the executive directors or someone else, they would send us a letter saying that that date has passed and that nothing could happen between now and the time that the legislature would end up having a chance to see this again. That is a very big concern that I'm hearing from a lot of groups as well as members in the legislature, given the fact that this has become a pretty interesting topic for a lot of people this session.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to get the letter to Ms. Lincheski tomorrow.
And that would be great because that would help us as well with the process. Ms. Hacking?
Not tomorrow, but the day after. I have a board meeting tomorrow.
Fair enough.
But very soon, yes. That would be very easy to do.
It is really what I think we're seeking is the assurances that this isn't going to happen, where the legislature is not completely settled in. And part of where we are at is that there wasn't anything in the governor's supplemental, the Senate, or the House's supplemental. We're kind of caught in a very awkward time in dealing with something that has such large financial consequences, but still recognizing that we need to be moving forward. Representative Albright and Senator Pappas, thank you for the suggestion. Members, just by way of consensus, is that acceptable to us? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that you're retiring soon. Does that change the impact of the letter at all?
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm here through December, so it will not change the intent of the letter of the law at all. I'll just send it. The authority is done. The earliest we could ever offer anything would be next January, February, but that wouldn't kick in until July, and then you would have a pension commission meeting. And quite frankly, we would hope that you would pass this provision that we put forward. All of you have spent a lot of time, a lot of leadership from Senator Pappas and Representative O'Driscoll and all of you. So our hope is that next year we can put together this shared solution and get that passed. So I appreciate all of the work, but we really think it's bigger than just an employee and employer contributions at this point.
Senator Anderson, I meant to say Representative Anderson, Chair Anderson, sorry.
I don't think the Senate would have me.
Oh.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bergstrom, but If you were to do it in January, say things changed and that you were to put it into effect, would that be reflected then in the February forecast if it was to come in the next fiscal year?
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it would not. I do think I would like to work with the MMB commissioner to try to get this on the agenda of the agencies, that we are going to come back with this proposal next year. But because I think it's important for agencies to get it on their radar so they can budget for it and plan for it. So while I can't initiate it, I do think I will have communications with Minnesota Management and Budget, because this, one of the problems that we face this year is there was no money. And I would like to talk to them and meet with them, and they're on my board, so that they too can plan for this, because this is not going to go away. This whole discussion is going to happen. So they can't pass the contribution rate increase, but I think if they had an opportunity to plan for it, it makes sense.
Mr. Bergstrom, Ms. Hacking, I did not mean to create a heart attack for anyone on this. Procedurally, we had been discussing what would need to be done on this, and I think that provides some assurance, and the letter will be helpful so members who are approached can provide that for comfort level. As everybody who's worked on this thing knows, this is an extremely fragile situation that we are trying to navigate and to negotiate through the legislative process to be able to get some relief in the plans at this point. So we've certainly had a discussion on this. It's in the public record as this, and that you're providing us with those letters with the general terms that we were talking about. So with that, I'm going to Representative Erickson has a question.
Not a question so much, Mr. Chair and members, but in the letter, we should be referencing 354.42 subdivision 4D, because that's where it specifically states what the commission review and reporting should be.
Yes.
So just to make sure that that's on the record as official.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I think that is the reference that's in the motions that everyone's got a copy of, and we certainly won't let Mr. Bergstrom and Ms. Hacking leave until they get a copy of that in case they can't remember the subdivision number for us here.
Mr. Chair, I have it. We'll go back and take my nitro pill.
With that, thank you both. Again, we were just looking at the procedural to make sure that we didn't have a major issue. So with that, we will then move to the
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Do we need to dispense or make discernment in terms of what to do with the motions themselves?
Since they have never been offered by anyone at this point, they were simply items that were passed around for looking and for discussion. There was never any action taken to consider yes or no on the motion, so it's no different than any other document, as I see it, that we'd have received as a handout at this point in our discussions. So I think that if we can set that aside, if there's a comfort level that that can't happen outside of the legislative time frame, and we've got letters coming from the plan directors to confirm that will help us with that. Senator Pappas, I'm going to ask you if you would like to talk about the next amendment, since a lot of this came from work that you had done and brought to us as we were kind of going back and forth, to ask if you'd like to walk through that, and then maybe Ms. Lincheski can help with that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I actually think that the staff, Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth, have done an excellent job in preparing the materials for us to present to the committee. They've been very easy to follow and clear in very various formats. So the basic idea with this is to remove the COLA trigger for MSRS, General Correctional, TRA, and St. Paul Teachers Retirement. So there's not going to be an automatic increase, and that was in all their sustainability plans. TRA specifically asked to extend the amortization period for reaching full funding because they weren't going to reach it in 2037. So I agreed, and Chair O'Driscoll did as well, that we could extend that to 2046. The St. Paul teachers, they have an agreement with the school district to add an extra 1.5% employer contribution starting in July 1st, 2018. So that's included for St. Paul teachers. And then the issue with COLA is the COLA reduction is tricky because if we come back to address this in January, we're not able to reduce the COLA immediately in January. I'm not sure at what point we could reduce it, but it makes it rather awkward. So we're proposing that we do go with a 1% reduction in COLA for TRA and a 0.25% for MSRS. But to because the commitment is to come back and address the entire plan, the shared pain plan, if you will, we put a sunset date on that. So that COLA reduction is only going to be for 1 year. But it does save TRA, I think, something like $64 million compounded, and MSRS, $18 million. So it definitely is making a difference in terms of trying to stabilize the funding for the plans. And is there anything I missed?
And again, that's for the 1 year for the calendar year of 2017.
Just for the COLA reduction.
Correct.
Everything else is ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Members, discussion on this. I know that some of you have heard this in some of the other committees as it's been working its way through the House and the Senate. Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking on page 3 of the 16A amendment. And it's just a point of clarification on line 3.21 through 3.23. And my presumption is that this would be pertinent to the defined contribution plan. That is why there's a zero for the assumed rate of interest rate assumption.
And Ms. Lincheski, in the amendment, are we reducing the interest rate assumption in the amendment, or is that in the actual bill?
This is a good reason why Mr. Bergstrom's not retiring until December. He's got the answer to the question for us. Mr. Bergstrom.
Oh, it's not TRA.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chair, I believe that's current law refers to the legislator's plan.
Yes.
We have no money in the legislator's plan. So okay. you could have an 8% return or a 10% return or a 0%, then it won't matter. And so we just put it at zero.
Because that wasn't something that was set up or funded. That's a general fund expenditure.
Correct.
And a number of years ago, the legislature changed that so that legislators don't get pensions. Some were grandfathered in, but current or newly elected don't have
Mr.
that.
Mr. Chair, correct. They closed it in 97, so it's a smaller group, and it's just to pay as you go. So there's no reason to have an investment assumption.
And, Mr. Chairman, I understand with history that legislators who were elected prior to that had a choice of staying in a defined benefit plan, which is, I think, is pay as we go, or going into a defined contribution plan. But everyone who was elected after 97 didn't have that choice. They just have a defined contribution plan. Under the theory that most legislators want something more portable and that they leave, they don't stay for 32 years like yours truly. But I'm also told for people who are unhappy about that you can blame Steve Morris in the Senate, and I don't know who was involved in the House at that time. Lisa, were you here then?
I was not. I could probably find out.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
A couple of tangential questions then. The first one is to be the necessity for that identifier in the bill itself. If there is no assumed rate of return, and if there is a need for it in there, is that because the defined benefit has been frozen and now we're dealing with a money purchase type of plan arrangement?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, you could certainly take out the reference. You could delete that line because it's not needed. It's all it is a closed retirement plan that's funded as a pay-as-you-go basis. So it's not really a money purchase plan. We get an appropriation every biennium to pay the monthly benefits to retirees. So it's just a direct appropriation comes in one day and it goes out the next to pay the benefits.
And from a ministerial standpoint, that may be something that we ask Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth to track. Given the time frame that we have, and we have a House bill and a Senate bill, and we're going through and having the conversation tonight, I do not want to get into details that we don't need to be dealing with in order to be able to get a bill passed and signed by the governor.
Certainly
to accomplish our objectives,
Sure.
that we're working on this year.
Just a mere housekeeping issue that would probably tighten up the language of Yep. understanding about what is pertinent to this commission.
Members, other questions before we open it to plan directors and the public? Mr. Bergstrom, before you go on Ms. Hacking and maybe Ms. Schertz, did you have any comments that you'd like to make on the amendment that's before the commission at this time? Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank you and Senator Pappas and everybody who was involved in trying to put together a package. I know it wasn't easy. I know you spent a lot of time. A lot of people did, so I appreciate that. I just want to reiterate what I said earlier, that this is sort of a stopgap measure. It does lower our cost by $18 million, but the proposal we had in front of you lowered our COLA permanently, and that saved $400 million. It had contribution rate increases. And we do think it's important to have a balanced package going forward. So when we do meet, I hope we can revisit this, or you can revisit this, because I think it's important to get done. I do appreciate all the work. I certainly understand it's, money is sometimes hard to find. But I just want to reiterate that this was caused by mortality change, and it's just not going to go away. But I do appreciate the efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Bergstrom. Ms. Schertz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We wanted to thank all the folks that were involved in it. We appreciate all the effort, especially staff, emails at midnight, weekends, et cetera. It was truly appreciated. We're very grateful to see the triggers removed and our agreement with the district ratified. It's an important step. Echoing Mr. Bergstrom's comments, obviously addressing this on an ongoing basis is critically important, not only for a funded ratio of the plan, but from my perspective, more importantly, as long as these plans operate with not the sufficient level of contributions, that means we are, by definition, taking principal out of our investment pools to meet our needs. And every time we take a dollar out of those pools, we make it that much harder to hit our investment returns and maintain stability. So we're looking forward to the conversation next year.
Thank you, Ms. Schertz. Ms. Hacking.
Laurie Hacking, TRA. The same. Thank you very much for all your hard work. And, you know, it's a difficult session. And this just starts, I think, the process. We do need a more shared sacrifice approach, and we'll come back with that next year. And just to clarify the numbers, the proposal, the amendment you're looking at, does save us $63.5 million. That's the present value of that COLA, that one-year COLA. But unfortunately, we have a $1.5 billion gap that we're trying to cover. And our original proposal did, in fact, come very close to closing that whole gap. So there's more to be done, but we appreciate everything that you've done so far and look forward to next year.
Thank you. We had two people who have asked to testify this evening, and I'll ask them both to start making their way. Mr. Haveman and Ms. Blyle. Mr. Haveman, there he is. I'm assuming that it's him as he's walking toward the testifying table. Sir, welcome to the commission. I'm going to ask you to state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Brevity is always appreciated by the commission from all testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Mark Haveman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this very important issue. Mr. Chairman, the testimony presented before the Commission this year has emphasized the role increasing longevity is playing in the need for corrective measures, including additional contribution increases. Over the past 10 years alone, longer lifespans have contributed to a $631 million increase in the unfunded liabilities of state pension plans. The failure to make prompt adjustments for developments like this is precisely what gets other states into so much trouble. Minnesota pension plans and this commission should be commended for acknowledging this issue and attempting to make prompt corrective action. However, over that same 10-year period, contribution deficiencies and investment income shortfalls have contributed $5.5 billion and $11.3 billion to the increase in unfunded liabilities, respectively. Respectfully, we suggest that this is where the problem really lies. And for this reason, we believe the financial solvency measures being proposed now and those likely to be recommended in 2017 should be described in the same way our organization has described all previous sustainability efforts: necessary but insufficient. We believe the testimony you've heard this session provides all the evidence for that conclusion. According to the valuation studies, pension plans should have $75 billion under management right now just to pay for benefits to existing retirees and the benefits public employees who are now working have already earned. As of the beginning of this year, pension plans had only $58 billion in retirement assets. That $75 billion is enough only if the retirement assets can be counted on to earn an average of 8% per year in the future. If we can only manage 7%, we should have an additional $10 billion under management right now. The actuaries' experience studies, as reported in the GASB compliance memo, have put the odds on realizing 8% over the next 20 years at just slightly better than 1 in 3. According to the actuaries, the odds of earning a 7% return are no better than a coin flip. Recently, the Treasury Department rejected the Central States pension cuts, due in part to the persistent unreasonableness of its 7.6% assumption, noting that it was 123 basis points above what the plan's own investment forecast data suggested for total portfolio returns. You have all seen the graphic presented here regarding funding responsibility, that dollar split into three pieces: investment earnings, employer contributions, and employee contributions. And investment earnings represent 71 cents of that dollar. The problem with this representation is that the capital represented in investment earnings doesn't come from magic beans. It comes from taxpayers and employees. Pension policy inherently contains a lot of uncertainty. But one thing can be absolutely guaranteed: investment houses and private equity funds will not be cutting us a check for the difference with an apology if we don't earn our expected 8%. But this is just part of the problem. If a mutual fund offered 10% but you didn't invest any money in it, did you really earn 10%? That's an extreme example of a chronic problem associated with state pension plans. Even if fantastic investment returns, far exceeding expectations, are available in the future, we still need the money to take advantage of them. We face two major challenges in this regard. First, thanks to changing demographics, pension plans are now paying out more in benefits than they are getting in from contributions to invest to meet future retirement obligations. Last year alone, cash flows out of Minnesota pension funds exceeded contributions and other inflows by over $2 billion. That puts the $85 million increase in employer contributions proposed this year into some perspective. As this trend continues and less capital is retained to invest, it will become more and more difficult to rely on investment performance alone to get us out of our existing hole. That problem is compounded by the politics of contribution policies, which you are all obviously very familiar with. We phase in contributions to make it more palatable to government budget planning and employees, but there can be extraordinary opportunity costs with contribution delays. The contribution increases that may be implemented over a year from now will absolutely miss out on a year of investment returns. If that year would provide the above average returns, which are supposed to balance out the lean years, it makes the delay even more damaging. It shouldn't be too surprising, then, that we've fallen collectively short of the actual required contributions 12 years in a row. Investment cash flow determines the pension wealth actually created to pay benefits. There's a difference between the always highlighted and much discussed time-weighted returns, as reported by the State Board of Investment, and the pension plan's own internal rates of return measured by the pension wealth that is actually created. The latter informs pension sustainability, the former does not. But there's still more. The challenge is not just about filling the hole. It's about paying for the new benefits that will be earned this year and every year thereafter. Those future benefits are based on taxpayer-guaranteed investment returns of 8% per year on all public retirement assets. Pension plan investments must return 8% to merely keep pace with the funding schedules. Put all this together, and regardless of what the graphs about reality in 2046 may suggest, we submit that we are not on a path to full funding, but rather on a multi-billion dollar hamster wheel that is spinning faster and faster. Mr. Chairman, we do some things right here, and this commission needs to be commended for that.
But as challenging as adopting the latest solvency measures has proven to be, they will prove to be inadequate because they are based on practices that make benefits look cheaper than they really are, essentially guaranteeing chronic underfunding going forward, and in the process exposing future taxpayers and public employees to wholly unacceptable risks and costs. We need more aggressive corrective action. Our taxpayers and our public employees deserve better. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Haven, for your testimony. Seeing no member questions, we will ask Ms. Julie Blyle to come down from AFSCME. Good evening, Ms. Blyle. Welcome. If you'll state your name for the record, and it looks like he brought a phone-a-friend along tonight as well. So we'll get to him if he wants to testify as well. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. I want to begin by stating that the previous testifier, Mr. Haverman, that we respectfully disagree that the sky is not falling when it comes to our pension plans, and we believe that our pension plans are very well managed in the state, and our members take very serious, the financial stability of the plans. So, as I proceed with that, I want, on behalf of AFSCME Council 5, to go on record in opposition to the bill that's before you tonight. We view it as a cut bill. We went to our board this past spring and asked them their position on the MSRS recommendation, their proposal for financial stability. They supported it. AFSCME retirees supported the proposal. We believe that what you have in front of you today is a piecemeal part of that. It does not include the shared sacrifice. And let me just say that over the years and over decades, we have worked with folks around this table, Senator Pappas, Senator Rosen, Representative Murphy, many times over on reform packages that have gone before the legislature to make sure that our funds were in sound financial shape. And with that, our boards have been supportive. So I'd like at this point to give you a real-life example, a member that's been with me today at the Capitol, a correctional officer, and from his perspective, the impact this is going to have.
Good evening, sir, and welcome. I know you've been around here throughout the course of the day because I saw you earlier at another meeting, so you get a double feature today.
Yes.
Just state your name for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sergeant Rick Nyson. I'm a correctional sergeant at the correctional facility in St. Cloud. I have been doing that for 23 years. I'm looking at retirement. It's getting closer and closer. As a brand new staff, I never envisioned myself sitting here speaking about retirement, but it is a real situation that everybody comes to. And throughout our lives, we make decisions, and our careers, we make decisions based on the pension and on the benefits that the employer and the state has offered us. As I get closer, it's concerning that the landscape changes. I do know that life changes, and we do have to make different decisions. But it feels to me that we're doing this somewhat knee-jerk, and it's concerning that we don't have all the parties and all the pieces to put together a sustainable plan. I'd have to reiterate what Julie said. It seems a bit rushed and piecemealed, and it's concerning for me and the retirees that I deal with. I'm also our local president for AFSCME, so I do have contact with a lot of them. I want people to know this is a very big deal. I don't think you take it lightly. That's not what I'm insinuating, but I'm here to say that people are very concerned with where we're headed. They may seem like small changes that we're looking at adopting, but people have made life decisions based on their pension. So I just wanted you to know that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Ms. Blyle, thank you as well. And is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify tonight on the 16A amendment? Anyone else wishing to testify tonight on the A16 amendment? Good evening and welcome. If you'll go ahead and state your name and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Rodney Rowe, Education Minnesota. I'd like to take this opportunity to speak with, or thank you to take this opportunity to speak with you this evening. And as you recall, the TRA board has worked with all of the stakeholders in crafting the sustainability package that was presented to this committee months ago. And we, along with the other stakeholders, have testified in support of that package. The TRA proposed a package that was designed to close the $1.5 billion funding gap created by the experience study recommendations. Unfortunately, the measure that is before you, while it is a small step in the right direction, only addresses about 4% of this gap. And even with the passage of the measure before you, a gap of over $1.4 billion will remain. As stated, we supported the package because it would sustain the fund and because it is a shared responsibility approach. The measure before you is not a shared approach, but it will put the entire burden upon the retirees and our actives. So we appreciate the efforts to try to make progress toward addressing the $1.5 billion gap. But this proposal before you is not the answer. So we are here tonight to reaffirm our support for the sustainability package, and we ask that the discussions for this support will continue in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rowe. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? Please come on down. Good evening and welcome. If you'll go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joan Beaver. I'm a teacher, or was a teacher, always a teacher, for 37 years in Stillwater, and I still live there. And I've been retired for 6 years, and I serve on the Education Minnesota Retired Board. And I am speaking tonight just because I want to reiterate a few things you've already heard. As AFSCME said with MSRS, we worked with TRA. TRA was very thoughtful and deliberate about seeking input from all the interested parties. And through that process, our members, Education Minnesota retired members, were not happy, to say the least, with the idea of a reduced COLA from 2% to 1%. The purpose of the COLA, of course, you understand, is to maintain the value of our pension benefits. And without an adequate COLA, those pension benefits become less and less valuable. However, because this was part of a package that said, you know, we're living longer, we're going to get benefits, presumably on average, we'll get benefits for a longer period, and we're doing other things, there's going to be other parties kicking in, we will make this sacrifice because it's part of what everybody needs to do to make this system work. We want this defined benefit pension system to work for now and for the future. You know, it retention attracts and retains teachers in the field of their profession. You heard the officer speaking about people making life decisions. We have an awful lot of teachers who are leaving the profession after a few years. But one thing that is an incentive for people to stay in is this defined benefit pension. And as educators, we're still very committed to what's happening in our classrooms today and want to see the profession prosper with quality professionals. So we, at this point, are very much opposed to this amendment because, as you heard, it only addresses 4% of the problem. It doesn't really deal with the problem. And the other piece isn't there. The part of the bargain that we signed up for is not there. And yes, I'm hearing promises that something will happen next year, but we heard another speaker talk about the cost of delay. You've heard that here at this committee before in earlier meetings this year, the cost of delay. And as also, there are no assurances of what will happen next year, truly. let's face it, there's an election coming up this fall. Who knows? I think this is one of the most I think it's a really unpredictable year politically. But we are just felt like this should be part of the package. Either you do it this year or you don't. So we just, for the record, wanted to state our position.
Ms. Beaver, thank you for your testimony this evening. Is there anyone else who wants to provide testimony before the commission this evening? Seeing none, we have the amendment before us. Ms. Blyle, were you looking to maybe come back again?
No.
Ms. Blyle?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm just going to...
Just state your name one more time, just for the record, if you would.
Julie Blyle, Legislative Director, AFSCME Council 5. I'm just going to throw out a suggestion here. In the bill, after both lines 1113 and lines 11.17, after 2018, add the words "and thereafter" in two places. That way it conforms with the sections on TRA.
Ms. Blyle, if you want to just hang on one second, sure. There was some discussion on that earlier. I think I'm going to refer to Ms. Lincheski, and we kind of had a little pre-conference about that. So I think we might have an answer as to what we'd be looking at and how we might be handling that request. So I'm just going to turn it over to Ms. Lincheski.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. We have prepared an amendment that we were going to suggest be offered this evening and if not tonight on the floor of each of the houses to make the change that you're mentioning here, that you're describing. So we've got paperwork in front of the commission and we'll move that forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Blyle, as you know how things kind of move from one chamber to the other, and so we're trying to figure out which chamber that technical correction should be taken into consideration.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's fine that we should add it tonight because our intention is to have tonight the proposal that we'll be moving, that we will continue to move through the House and the Senate.
I have no problem with that if you want to move that, the 6A amendment for the technical correction on that.
I think it's drafted to the legal amendment. So we should move the 16A separately from the 20A.
Do we have it somewhere?
I'm sorry. What staff has done is prepared it to the House version, to the Senate version, and the version that we're working on this evening. So with that, it is the 20A, I think, is what we're going to be needing to look at with that correction language on here. Members, we'll get a copy of that out to you here as well, and members of the public want to take a look at it. It says, Ms. Blyle said, there's just a couple of spots in the bill where there's some technical correction language that further clarifies.
Mr. Chairman, while that's being passed out, did you want to take the 16A amendment now? And I could move that.
Certainly. Senator Pappas moves the 16A amendment. Any discussion by members on the 16A? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? And then, members, you should have the 20A amendment, which, again, is going to be that technical correction that we were just discussing with Ms. Blyle on that. And Senator Pappas and I have talked about it, and we don't see that there's any substantive changes that are going to affect the nature of the bill on that. So, members, questions on that? We'll go to Representative Anderson and Representative Albright. Representative Anderson.
Chair, earlier this evening we heard the bill as part of State Gov Finance. What, if any, does this have an impact on the proposed fiscal note that's been put in the works? You know, what is the true effect of this? And what problem are we solving?
Representative Anderson, that's a good question. I will ask Ms. Lincheski to comment on that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. This came in this afternoon. It's not entirely clear to us and others that it is necessary, but in the interest of being very clear about the intent, this duplicates the way the COLA increase that will occur after the one-year reduction is to occur. And it uses language that is identical to what is in the bill for TRA. So this change relates only to the MSRS section of the bill, and it will make clear that effective January 1, 2018 and thereafter, the post-retirement increase of 2% will continue.
Representative Anderson, follow up.
Well, if that's the case, it seems redundant. And
Representative Anderson, if you're saying it's redundant because it's in the bill twice, there's two different plans that it's being tracked to. Because you've got TRA in one section of statute and MSRS in another statute, or section statute.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Just to say it another way, we're just trying to be consistent. So we could consistently add and thereafter, or consistently take out and thereafter. And it's actually clearer to leave it in.
So we're just going to repeat the redundancy again because it was from before.
Is that right? It's in there for TRA. It's not in there for MSRS.
No, that's what I'm. What I'm saying, Senator. I mean, we're basically just.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Or it's belt and suspenders if you want to look at it that way.
Our comfort language.
Representative Albright.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and actually, Representative Anderson hit on. Kind of a concern that I would have from the fiscal perspective, but she also stole my thunder a little bit in terms of whether or not the two words and thereafter are to use comfort language to assure those that read this that, you know, it is intentional. My question is actually further on in that same sentence, where it says increase of 2% must be applied to the monthly annuity. Are we compounding that on a monthly basis, or are we actually using that as a per annum number? I think that is a bit ambiguous in terms of you could be compounding this at a rate of 24% a year if someone read that wrong.
Representative Albright, my assumption is that it's the 2% annual, but if you would like to have Mr. Bergstrom come down and to discuss that, in that, or was that in the TRA or the MSRS?
Mr. Chair, I believe it is the same language in both the sections.
Ms. Lincheski also would like to, before Mr. Bergstrom comments, share on that as well.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, if you look over on page 10, line 10.33, and if you also look, for the sake of consistency, at line 12.31 and 12.32 on page 12, you will see that in each case, MSRS and TRA, it notes that the post-retirement adjustment is annually on January 1 as follows. And then the rates are laid out. So we believe, and we've spoken with the revisers on this question, that that language is clear that the post-retirement increase is an annual increase and occurs on January 1 of each year.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
And to Ms. Lincheski then, is that increase, that annual increase, also cited in the provisions that you just elaborated on?
Ms. Lincheski.
Yes. Yes, I believe I understand your question. Yes. It is here, and then I think the fact that it is that the specific increase is laid out then in the provisions that we're talking about. I think they work together and we believe are clear.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To use an old phrase, to trust but verify, particularly with the provisions that start on lines 11.13 and 11.17, I think the Commission should be reassured that we're not doubling up in terms of the making a statement more ambiguous than it needs to by citing 2% here, but then it's also in the table. I hope my suggestion is clearer than what I just heard it. So I'll leave it at that.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was a little confused here because the 20A amendment says that it amends the delete everything amendment, but it actually amends the 16A amendment. And I was very confused looking for it in the delete all amendment, the 10A. Yes, the 20A says it amends the 10A, but it actually amends the 16A. All right.
We could do a quick oral amendment on that if you'd like to make that correction, Senator Pappas.
I'll just incorporate that into the 20A amendment on line 1.2, that it should say House 2807-16A.
Other questions on the 20A amendment? If not, Senator Pappas, did you want to move that?
I'll move that amendment.
Senator Pappas moves the 20A amendment for the inclusion in the 2016 Omnibus Pension Bill. Any other discussion? Hearing none, seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. We are now down to the final step that we would do in the pensions process, which is to take the bill, and I'm going to ask Ms. Dyson to help me with that process. Members, are there any other questions that you have before we move the omnibus bill at this point? If not, I will move the delete all amendment H2807-10A as amended to be adopted as the 2016 Omnibus Pension Bill. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Oh,
sorry, I'm sorry, I didn't see Representative Murphy. Please. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I do have some discussion.
Please do.
What happens to this if you just proceeded? Then we would be done, and then the meeting would be adjourned?
Representative Murphy, the process that we would be looking at is everything that was done here this evening in the way of amendments, everything that was done here in the way of discussion has already been proceeding in the House and the Senate. So every amendment that we've taken here tonight has been done in the House with the same language that we've done here tonight.
Except for the 28.
Yep. And I was going to get to that, except for the one corrections that we had seen. We did the same thing over in the Senate. So all three of these are exactly the same because we wanted to come to the Pension Commission because this is where the work is being done. We want to have the exact same language, and it's proven to be a good exercise tonight because we found something that we need to take in the Senate. We'll take that up as an amendment on the floor. And then when they send it to us, we'll already have that correction, so we stay consistent with that. And Senator Pappas and I were doing a lot of that last year when there were little technical things. One was traveling a little bit ahead of the other, so we could always make sure that we didn't have a problem. The step that's here this year is it's a different vehicle that's moving because of the time constraints in trying to put a deal together and get things to a point where we can get legislative approval on it. Does that help?
Yes, that helps, Mr. Chair. And then, so I have a little bit of discussion.
Please.
And a little bit of question.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was listening to the state government meeting this afternoon, and I had before me, though, the what this bill before us contains, the list of bills, the summary. And I had a question about number 7.
Representative Murphy, is that from the one that was this afternoon, or is that the one that we received this evening?
It was, it's the one that, the summary is the one here, but it was discussed a little bit. It was reviewed. There was no discussion, and I just need a little background on what number 7 is.
Could you
on the summary tonight?
Article 7 or?
No, it's House File 3347, Senate File 3011, number 7 on the summary for this evening.
The Metsa-Thomasoni?
Yes.
MSRS allowing MnDOT employees, is that the?
Yes.
All right. With that, we'll ask Ms. Lincheski to...
I understand there's 20 employees involved.
to comment on that, and Mr. Bergstrom, you may also want to join us for some backgrounding on this as well. So Ms. Lincheski, Ms. Barth is going to speak to that. Ms. Barth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So yes, Representative Murphy, it's 22 individuals who had been informed throughout their career that they were eligible for the Rule of 90, and then they recently found out that they were actually not. They had been misinformed by through MSRS communications.
And Mr. Chair and Ms. Barth, I do have the summary from February 19th before me, and I've read that. But we're asking these 22 individuals to, if they want to participate, to buy back with both their share and the employer share?
Mr.
Bergstrom.
Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct. Yeah. And it was patterned after a bill that was enacted about 2 years ago.
Okay. And
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bergstrom, do you have any idea of how many of these 22 will participate?
Mr. Bergstrom.
This point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm guessing about a half of them, because many of them are past the point where Rule of 90 matters. They're past age 63, for example. So I'm guessing about half of them. Their payment's quite small because they, what happened is they became members after July 1 of 89. So they were temporary employees, so they had very little salary. But they actually were in this seasonal job before July 1 of 89. So they're buying like 5 or 6 months of service. We had coded them, so when the payroll came in, somebody manually put in the June 1st of 89 date, so we've been sending them Rule of 90 data all along. And so, we've been telling them we're Rule of 90, so they've been misinformed. It was our error, and this just makes it right. So the cost is minimal because they are buying so little time, and then MSRS would absorb the rest of the cost.
Representative Murphy.
And Ms. Barth, I understand that from the sheet that you don't think that a precedent will be established.
Ms. Barth.
I'm sorry, Representative Murphy, I don't remember my memo. Can you remind me?
Permitting these individuals to purchase service credit for uncovered employment to qualify for the Rule of 90 due to an MSRS error would not set a new precedent.
Mr. Chair, yes, Representative Murphy, and I meant more the point of because it was due to an error, not someone who thought that their coverage, an internship should make them eligible for the Rule of 90. I meant more they were misinformed, and therefore it doesn't set a bad precedent in that sense.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
And, Mr. Chair, we voted on this in commission before.
Okay. We did.
Thank you very much.
Other questions, Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, there's one more question that I had, and then I have a statement, sort of. I had a bill, House File 2945, which the Senate has the information in another bill, in the contracts bills. And this would allow the pension like MSRS and the TRA and PERA boards to establish the salary of the director. And I understand that it's in the contract. It's in the contract bill, and it's in Representative Lilly's contract bill that's in Ways and Means and is being held in Ways and Means and didn't pass out. And so it's not on the House. It won't be considered on the House floor. And we did not discuss the subject in Pension Commission, and I'm disappointed about that because it was something that the plan directors did bring to our attention in the last year, and it's something that plan directors and the boards of the plans wanted our consideration on, and that's one of the reasons why I introduced the bill. But I didn't get a hearing. And so I think that that is another issue that is hanging out there for a future time or possibly for discussion on the House of Representatives. Obviously, the Senate's already discussed it as an issue. But at some point in time, Mr. Chair, I think the Pension Board or the Pension Commission should be discussing that issue because it's something that we all have in common. The other things that I wanted to talk about are things that came up in Mr. Haviman's presentation and in the discussion when you and Senator Pappas was giving your overview of how we arrived at tonight. And I am disturbed about how this is about the fourth or fifth cycle that we have come to the end without money. And something in the House of Representatives and the Senate process of knowing what costs money. Because we are a commission and we deal mostly with policy on pensions, but when we have to set policy and future plans for the plan, or we have to consider the suggestions of the plans for their future payouts to future retirees, it always costs money and includes opportunities for contributions to rise. And we have talked about it enough and had been confronted with the problems of it enough that our leadership seems to me should be taking the costs of pensions now and forever in the future more seriously as a major part of the appropriation cycle. It seems to me that this commission should be asked first before any of the finance committees, what are your costs going to be? But since that hasn't happened, I think the members of the commission have to become more advocates for targets much earlier in the session to at least the appropriation chairs, if not to total leadership in the House and in the Senate. But prior to that, and I have been on a mission for at least four cycles to tell our major agencies, the commissioners of our major agencies, that they have to have line items in their budgets for pensions, the costs of pensions. because we don't ever want to be in the situation that the central states are in with the Teamsters' pensions, where 13,000 people or groups did not have any new money going into it for years. We have the responsibility, and the government, our state government, has the responsibility of knowing how much present employees and future employees needs, how much money has to be put in for the costs of the pensions for present and future employees. And if it's not even a line item, who's going to think about it until it's too late, as we are facing tonight, with just a bit of the total sustainable package that was presented to us. We've made a few steps forward in that people are now acknowledging, yes, we should do that. But we have to make sure that, getting back to what Senator Pappas and you were saying, if by chance, and it's not going to be chance, it's going to be by some failure from someone else, that there could be money left this year to say that should go to pensions. And we might have to meet again then to spend the $30 million or $50 million or $120 million that could be left. The next thing that must be done in light of the Amendment 16A that was adopted on this bill tonight, or is going to be adopted on this bill tonight, Pension Commission members are going to have to be appointed in January and start their work in January in order for the full package to be adopted. The education has to take place. The members, the new senators, and the new House members are going to have to know, and we're going to have to proceed quickly. And so we're going to have to make sure before we leave this year that the leadership knows that Pension Commission can't start with their first meeting in April of next year. All that being said, I'm disappointed that we don't have a sustainability package in here as was planned. But I certainly understand why, because you explained it so well, and Senator worked so hard. To get it this far. And I thank you for that. But let us be soldiers and go out the next 4 days and continue our education process, if indeed we are going to fulfill our responsibility as commissioners. I'm done now.
Well, Representative Murphy, thank you. You have been a valuable member of this commission over the years, and as you all know, we have referred to you a number of times as our friend and historian on this commission as to what has happened before, and so your words do not fall lightly on the ears of the members of this commission, I'll assure you of that. Senator, Representative Anderson, that was almost twice that I did that tonight. Members, other questions? If not, let's see. We are going to, I will move. We already did that, didn't we? Okay. I renew my motion that the delete all amendment H2807-10A as amended be adopted as a 2016 omnibus pension bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Members, I have one other small item, and I will tell you it's in the way of a motion, and this is something that is piggybacking off of the item that we had done earlier this session when we did a motion relative to the Fairview item. Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth have been kind of putting a list of things together that they've discovered and that they would like to talk about and work on in the interim, and they wanted to advise the commission accordingly and, if you will, get the commission's blessing on some of these items that they'd like to put in their work plan. And so I had told Ms. Lincheski that we would give the commission an opportunity to consider this if they wanted to move forward with this as a motion, and that she would provide a very brief overview to give us a flavor as to the things that she was thinking about and conversations with plans and from some of their discoveries, having been newer to their positions. And so with that, Ms. Lincheski, I'm going to ask you to share your thoughts and what you'd like to see us do as it relates to this motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The motion gives direction to my office as well as the plans, MSRS, Para, TRA, and St. Paul Teachers, to get together this summer and work through the directives here, which are really to look at what might be done to reduce the plan's liabilities, achieve greater uniformity, and make adjustments in view of longer lives and later retirement. I think as I'm learning more about the plans, I'm seeing things that perhaps could be tweaked that might help things out, one of which I think came really into the deliberations of the commission, i.e. The Fairview situation. So in connection with that work, and then really just looking at what we have here by way of, many different provisions, not much uniformity, and other things that could be done to achieve some efficiencies. Also, I'm very sensitive about the departure of Mr. Bergstrom from serving as director, and I think we really would like the opportunity to spend some time with him and just get him to share with us the things that he feels could be done to really help the plans out, because these are complicated statutes. There's a lot in there, and I do think that we can improve on what we have. I also think some of the errors that we've uncovered in working with the individuals and that sort of thing, I think a look at what our communications are, what we're doing by way of telling members what benefits they're going to have, I think we could do that kind of a review as well and try to get sort of best practices implemented across the board with all the plans so we don't have these errors. And I think they're already making those improvements, but I think we could continue on that path. So this is really a directive to us to work together and try to put a report together that'll be ready for presentation to the next commission.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also like to just suggest that in this resolution that we incorporate some of Representative Murphy's suggestions. I think they were very spot on, and I think we should be talking at a very early stage about the commitment to pensions and appropriating money, especially in appropriation year. So that should be one of our goals, and Representative Murphy, if you want to continue on with what else should be in the resolution. Anything else you want to share?
Representative Murphy.
Well, I think the things that I mentioned, and then we should, Mr. Hubinger should be involved also, I think, then, because he's the kind of the liaison with the House and the Senate. And I just don't have my head together to add anything more. But
Mr. Chair,
as I think of things, I'll make a list.
I know I've got some members that are asking some questions. I just want to, as Ms. Lincheski presented this, these are all within the scope of the office's duties right now. I think what Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth were trying to do was to let the commission know as we wrap up this year some of the objectives that they want to be working on, and let us know next year some of the things that they're going to be bringing forward. I don't think that this is all-inclusive of what they're going to be doing. I don't think this is the only things that they're going to be doing. I think they wanted to advise us as commission members what it is that they'd like to be working on and moving forward with. And we wouldn't even necessarily have to have it in the form of a motion, only that we've done that in the past with the Fairview issue. That was the discussion that came forward of, well, is that how we should do it, or we were directed to do that? And so, again, we said, we'll bring it in the form of a motion, and we'll see what the commission wants to do. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We actually are fortunate in that we have the state government chairs on the commission, Senator Saxhog and Representative Anderson. I think what Representative Murphy was talking about is that because we don't need pension money every year, it's not typically that those divisions are given budget targets to include a pension adjustment, because this only comes in front of people, maybe every 4 or 5 years, and that we have to figure out how our fiscal staff is helping us to remember that early on in the process we're saying, okay, what do we need anything for pensions? Nope, we're good. All right, now we can fund the rest of our budget. So I think it's an internal process that the House and the Senate need to develop.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator and Representative Murphy. I think that it should be more inclusive. I was happy to hear that Mr. Bergstrom is going to sit down with MMB, because this should be part of our budget forecasts and the liability that we have. Right. I think it just makes for good management overall.
So again, to your original point, Senator Rosen, we could certainly add things to this. This is not all-inclusive. This is the things that they are looking at. And I suspect that with some of the targets that we have in here, as the chair and the vice chair, we're going to continue to stay in contact with Ms. Lincheski. And as it warrants, even in the interim, if some of these work products are there, we can continue to look at those so we don't lose time. There will be some members that will most likely be coming back on the commission. It provides us some more flexibility in getting a little bit ahead of the curve on some of the things that we were talking about previously. And that was our when they approached me with the concept, and I said, well, we'll bring it to the commission and see what the commission is having to say. Ms. Hacking, did you also want to share? And I do want to get this wrapped up, because folks have had a long evening here.
Laurie Hacking, the chair. Just a question of clarity.
Certainly.
Don't you want sustainability in here? I mean, isn't that really your priority? And I just wanted to ask whether that should be, if you do go forward with a motion, really, in my mind, there's a very high priority on financial sustainability. And these other things are fine to study and, you know, bring forward information that would be useful. But this would take a lot of your time, staff's time, potentially commission's time and our time, and it's worth doing, but sustainability is going to take time as well.
Okay.
And so I ask that as a question of what your priorities are and what's your direction to us in terms of, and to your staff, of where to put resources. So that was just a question.
Ms. Hacking, that's a very interesting observation. And I have seen both Ms. Barth and Ms. Lincheski jotting notes here. I don't even know if we have to have this in the way of a motion. I think this is, for the lack of a better term, this is how they plan to spend their summer vacation. from us as commission members. And so they wanted to, more than anything, advise us of the things that they were going to be looking at and give the commission, which they've done, an opportunity to weigh in on some other kinds of things. And if you're okay with not doing it in a motion, I'm fine. That was just kind of a how we have done it in the past. If it's been advised, you know what their work list is going to be looking at. If there's any major objections, then we need to know that. But they will be working in that direction and taking into account the things that they've heard this evening is how I see it. Senator Pappas.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, whether we decide to offer this as an emotion or just suggestion to staff, I would suggest under paragraph A, on the second line, under could be made to insert for financial stability and then complete it after that. Because I do think that that's probably the most important thing and was definitely missing here.
So to save members the tedious task of creating a motion that we'd have to dot our I's and thereafters and all of those kinds of things, are we okay with just having received this information from them and knowing that this is the scope in which they're going to work, but not exclusively what they're going to be working on? With that, I want to thank all of the commission members for their work. I want to thank the directors. I also want to thank our nonpartisan staff and the partisan staff and all who have worked with us to be able to make this successful. With that, I have Representative Erickson and then a couple of other quick comments along the way here. So Representative Erickson, then we'll go to Rosen and then to Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered, in addition to what our esteemed staff will do, has Mr. Shepherd in recent years, or perhaps it's current, prepared a historical document of what's occurred within this commission and the plans, some data over the last, 20 years? Do you do an annual or, do you have a document filed? I guess maybe we need him to come to the table.
Mr. Shepherd is giving the nod of, nope, I don't have that file, Representative Erickson.
But I wonder, do we have a document available in House research of something that he has done on pensions? Ms. Lincheski is shaking her head.
Yeah, as clarification, do you mean sort of the history of the Pension Commission?
Yes, yes.
You know, I think
the decisions we've made over the years, just to show us a trend line of what's occurred. I know he's very good at providing history in many areas, but
yeah. I think my predecessor was a historian in, great detail in our files on that issue. So I certainly can work with Mark to put it in a format that you're all familiar with, but I think we've got many pages of paper in our office that we can pull out and develop a history like that.
Well, I just say this because in education, as a chair, we have fiscal and we have policy. So Ms. Larson does periodic reports. We get booklets. The same is done from fiscal. And we're able to keep track of that historical change. Mm-hmm. And I think that's always very important for us to keep track of and to know, and certainly would benefit you as well, but for members, because we change. You know, our membership changes. We're not all here. And I served previously at least a dozen years ago. So I harken back to the Phil Krinke days. And so that, that's what's in my memory. And then I missed all these years, and now I'm back. So I just would appreciate that. Thank you.
Members, just one more thing before we before I go to Rosen and Pappas. Mr. Bergstrom, I'm just going to ask you to stand for a moment, if you would. I'm going to embarrass you a little bit because it just occurred to me that even though you said... Even though you said you're going to be around until December, this group may not get a chance, depending upon what happens in the interim, to get a chance to wish you well. So thank you for your service to the commission and to the people of the state of Minnesota and the pensionees.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd just like to thank the Pension Commission. You know, I've been doing this for 25 years at MSRS and about 4.5 years when I worked at BDRA. And you've been awesome to deal with. It's over the years, this commission and the previous commissions dealt with a lot of you. So it's my pleasure.
Thank you again, Mr. Bergstrom. Senator Pappas and then Senator Rosen.
Pappas, she's Rosen.
I'm sorry. See, you're dressed almost alike tonight. That was what confused me.
only a guy with.
Well, I just, I too would just want to say thank you to this commission, actually, and Mr. Chair. We do very serious work around this table, and it is extremely refreshing to do it in a very nonpartisan way, as Senator Pappas mentioned earlier. And we do serious work here too, and I think we do good work. It was a difficult pension commission, I believe. We've made some hard decisions this year. But I just wanted to thank all of you, and I'm glad that you recognize our fearless leader over there, because he's been great to work with also. So we're going to miss you, Dave.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, you might have already answered my question, which was, is the Pension Commission going to meet the rest of the year?
There may be some opportunities for us to do that. We'll just see what the workload and what happens on this. And finally, members, and this will be my last comment, we do have some retiring members from the Pension Commission, Senator Johnson, Senator Goodwin, and Senator Thompson.
They've already retired, it looks like to me.
some took the early buyout, I think, on this. And Senator Thompson, I know you and I have served together for 4 years on this, and I thank you for your service on the Pension Commission, sir, as well. So,
thank you.
With that, being no other business before the commission, we are adjourned.
See you tomorrow morning. Yep. Yep. Oh, love your socks. Oh, God. I do. Send them mine.